Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Kufyut Tetim and Aleph, five lines down, continuing the discussion of the machlok between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan as to whether there are minimum shiurim for a shumerin for a yad. Rav is of the belief that in yad pachot mikizayit, that you can't have a yad unless the food item that the yad is contributing towards is a kizayit worth. Vein shumer pachot mikipul, and a shumer is only meaningful in the context of the core item is the size of a pool, the size of a bean. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, yesh yad lepachot mikazayit. There is a yad for less than a kazayit, and there is a shomer for pachot mikapul. Rashi took those to mean that shomer has no shiur whatsoever, but yad does have a minimum shiur of pool. The Ramban disagreed and said that Rabbi Yochanan believes that there's no shiur, whether it's a yad or whether it is a shomer. The Gemara discussed yesterday the Tosefta from Oholot with regards to Tumat Amet, and how Rabbi Yochanan and Rav would fit into that. Now the Gemara does a similar thing with regards to a Tosefta from Upsin, which is Tashma. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kulit, Sheyesh Aleha Kazayit Basar, a Kulit, which is the upper bone of the thigh. If you remember in the animals, they're constructed of three bones that make up the leg. The upper bone of the leg, that Kulit, Sheyesh Aleha Kazayit Basar, if it has a kazayit basar on it, goreret kula l'tuma, then the entire bone is classified as being towards the tuma. Achirim omrim, afilu ein alea ela kipul. Even if only there's the size of a pull of basar in it, goreret kula l'tuma, then it takes all of it along to become tame. So you see here, it's seemingly two different thresholds. According to the Tanakama, Rabbi Yehuda, you need a kazayit basar. And according to the Acherim, which in general is a reference to Rabbi Meir, then even a pull of basar would be sufficient. Virav, hai, b'may mukimla. How is Rav going to deal with this Tosefta? Again, the question is equally relevant to Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara just starts out with Rav, either because Rav Tanu Polig, and therefore Rav could have argued, and yet we're trying to figure out how he can fit in, or because Rav's Shita can fit into both of the Tanaim that are found in the Tosefta, whereas Rabbi Yochanan, we're going to see later, can only fit in according to one of the two Tanaim. But the question is equally applicable to Rabbi Yochanan is to Rav, which is, how are you going to construct this Tosefta so that it's not a problem according to your Shita? Ibi Yad, if you suggest that we're speaking about a Yad over here, Kasha Seifa, then the latter half of the Tosefta, the Acherim, is problematic because Rav says, in order to be a yad, you need a minimum of a kizayit. So the Tanakama makes sense, but Acherim, who say a pull, how are you going to make sense out of that? Ibn Shomer, if you think that we're speaking about a Shomer, he says that the minimum threshold for a Shomer is a pull. Then Kashereisha, then why does Rabbi Yehuda require a minimum of a kizayit if we're speaking about a Shomer? So Ibn it's Ema Biyad. Some suggest that he's going to explain it as being a yad. Behuda Amar ke Rabbi Yehuda. And he holds like Rabbi Yehuda. If you're going to say, Ein Ochanami, Rabbi Yehuda is Lashita T. Acherim, Rabbi Meir, I don't hold of that, or I'm not subscribing to that. Yes, the Mishnah, the Braita is speaking about a case of Yad, and I can only fit in according to Rabbi Yehuda. Be'ibai Teima B'Shomer. Others suggest that it's speaking about a Shomer. Ke Acherim. And then Rav would be forced then to subscribe to the view of Acherim of Rabbi Meir, because then that would have the minimum shiur of a pull. The kazayit of Rabbi Yehuda would then be too high a threshold even for Rav, and he wouldn't hold like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Kula Bishomer. And Rabbi Yochanan says that the entire Braita has to be speaking about a Shomer. Behuda Amar ki Acherim. And he holds like the Acherim. So now, he has a choice. He could have set it up like a Yad, or he could set it up like a Shomer. Because in both of those instances, Rabbi Yochanan believes that there is no Shiur. Even according to Rashi, if he thinks that it's a yad, he thinks that the minimum shiur is a pull, and he could have set it up like Rabbi Meir, or like the Acherim over here. So Rabbi Yochanan could have explained it, whether he explains it as a shomer, or whether he explains it as a yad. The reason that he explains it as a shomer, and not as a yad, is because it's easier then to say what we're about to say in the Gemara, which is, Acherim hakapul ka'amre. The Acherim say that it is a pull. Now, for Rashi, that would be not a question if it was a yad, because a yad is the size of a pull. But according to the Ramban, it wouldn't have mattered. And according to Rashi, now, if it's a shomer according to Rabbi Yochanan, has no minimum shiur. So why is Rabbi Meir saying that there is a minimum shiur of a pool? Aidi de kamar tanakama shiura, kamreinu nami shiura. Since the Tanakama Rabbi Yehuda mentioned a shiur, so too did the Achirim mention a shiur. Not because the shiur is meaningful. You don't need a shiur for shomer at all. Just they were bringing something smaller. You said kazayit, we don't need a kazayit. You can have even a pool. It was enough. Now, truth is, even less than a pool is enough. But they just gave something small just to indicate that they don't subscribe to Rabbi Yehuda's. Amarava dekanami dibishomer askinan. It is miduyak that we're speaking about a shomer here. Diktani kulit. Because it uses the bone of the kulit, shmamina. Rava is saying somewhat along the lines of what you're saying, which is, why did the Braita pick the kulit bone? What is significant about the kulit bone that is differentiated from other bones? It could have been any bone in the animal if you're speaking about it as a yad. If you're speaking about it as a shomer, then the kulit becomes important. And that's what Rashi says with regards to the bone of the kulit, the stam kulit yesh ba moach, the default or the situation is that the kulit always has marrow inside of it. Since it has marrow inside of it, that's why they picked the kulit bone in particular. And now it makes sense, you're speaking about a shomer, because the bone surrounds the marrow, and therefore it makes a lot more sense that you're speaking about a shomer over here. And that's why it's meduyak. So that would also be supportive of why Rabbi Yochanan is saying that it is a shomer and not a yad, because of the fact that the Braita is meduyeket, that it's speaking about a shomer because it picked the kulit bone. Since Rabbi Yochanan believes there's no difference between a shomer and a yad, they both don't have any threshold, then even if he sets it up as a yad, he's still going to have to explain why the level of a pool is meaningful. For Rashi, who believes that there is a difference between Yad and Shomer, there would have been a huge advantage of explaining it as a Yad instead of a Shomer.
And that's what Rashi says over here, that Koshukain, Diabi Mukile Rabbi Yochanan B'Yad, Habe Nechalet Fei. According to Rabbi Yochanan, if he established it as a Yad, it would have been just as good, if not better, because he could have held like the Achirim. And therefore, according to Rashi, it would have worked beautifully, which is that you would have had it been a pool, which is exactly what the Yad was. The reason that the Gemara doesn't do that is because of this diok at the end, which is the fact that we're speaking about the kulit bone. And the kulit bone forces you in the direction of saying it's a shomer. So had Rabbi Yochanan established the Braita as speaking about a yad, we still would have come back and asked him the question because it's more likely that the Braita is speaking about a shomer than it is speaking about a yad. Tosafot says, then why don't we say that about Rav's position before? We said according to Rav, you can explain it as a yad or you can explain it as a shomer. If the kulit bone pushes you towards saying it's a shomer, why don't we say about Rav also that he needs to say that it's a shomer and not a yad? So the Baal Tosafot would say that the Gemara had a vested interest in keeping Rabbi Yehuda's position alive. And that's because Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Meir, in general, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Meir. So now, according to Rabbi Yochanan, he has to subscribe to the Achirim, Rabbi Meir. And if you explained Rav's position as a shomer, he'd also have to explain that the halacha or the Braita is following the Achirim. The only way we can get a position that follows Rabbi Yehuda is by saying that Rav explains the Braita as a yad. And therefore the Gemara wanted that option left, the Baalei Tosafot say, in order that Rav could then be like Rabbi Yehuda, the Hilchato Kavadei, the Gabi Rabbi Meir, because halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Meir. Therefore we want that option to still be there or to be open to us. Because if you're going to pass on like Rabbi Yehuda, you want at least one of the two Amoraim over here who are arguing about this point to at least be able to subscribe to Rabbi Yehuda. And that can only be done if you have a yad, and therefore they're willing to forego the diuk of the kulit in order to get Rav to fit in according to Rabbi Yehuda. All right, so now we move on to another machloket, which parallels the machloket between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, which is Itmar. Rabbi Chanina Amar Zehu Shi'ur. The Achirim, when they said a pool, they literally meant a pool and not just figuratively a pool. That is like the Shita of Rav, that a Shomer requires a minimum Shi'ur of a pool. Rabbi Yochanan, the Shita To Amar Ein Zeh Shi'ur. That the pool that is mentioned by the Achirim is not an exact Lav Dafka, that it is a pool. And that's Rabbi Yochanan, the Shita To, that a shomer has no shiur whatsoever. Ain't there shiur? How can you say that there's no shiur? Vaktani kipul. They write, like the size of a pool. Makes it sound like they are giving a shiur. So, Aidi dekamar tanakama shiura,
Kamarinu nami shiura. The same way that we answered before, the Tanakhama gave a kazayit. They wanted to say not a kazayit. So instead of saying not a kazayit, they just gave something that was much smaller to indicate that they don't think there's any shiur over here. But now that the pool in and of itself is meaningful, just a way to say not a kazayit, nothing matters over here. Like a pool, even something as small as a pool would be fine to make it into a shomer, and not the pool either. Even less than a pool would be the same as well. Tashma, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, mitaher b'shel pool, umitamei b'shel kidnit. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says that when it belongs to a pool, then it is tahor, umitamei b'shel kidnit. But when it comes to pulse or peas, that does have the din. Bipnei shirutze b'mash mishan. Because he wants them for the handling of them. So the Mishnah that they're quoting is from Uksin, and it actually picks up in the middle of the Mishnah. It leaves out the statement right before, which gives you an indication as to what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is addressing. And that's in the first parak in Uksin and Mishnah Hey. It says, V'chein b'kitniyot, when it's speaking about these kitniyot, sharvit shirikno tahor. If the pod that had that kitniyot inside of it is emptied out, it is tahor. She'er bo gargir echad tameh. As long as there's one item that's left in the pod, then the pod is tameh. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah mitaher b'shel pul, umitameh b'shel kitniyot. He says when it comes to that of beans, the pods are not considered to be tameh. When it comes to the kitniyot, the peas or the pulse, mipnei shu rotze b'mishmushan. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's statement is coming off the previous statement of the Mishnah, which is we're speaking about these pods. So now these pods that are empty, we say, are tahor because they're not servicing any food that's inside of them. The pod in and of themselves is not the food, and it has no din of tumat ochlin. But if there is one gargir, if there's one piece of food that's left inside the pod, then the entire pod is considered to be an extension of the food itself, because it's protecting the food that's inside of it. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah comes along and distinguishes between that of beans and that of kitniyot. When it comes to that of a pool, he says that the pods are not important. When it comes to the peas or the pulse, there the pods are important. And the reason being because rotze b'mishmushan, beans are big enough to handle by themselves. If you want to clean them, wash them, they're large enough that you can hold them, you can work with them, they don't get ruined in that way. So therefore the pod is not so important because you can deal with them, ex the pod. On the other hand, when it comes to the kitnit, when it comes to either peas or it comes to these pulse, these items are both softer and smaller. And therefore the pod becomes extremely important in the handling of these items because it protects them both from being ruined, as well as it gives you the ability to handle them, to work with them. And so therefore the pod will be tameh when it's kitniyot, but with pool, it will not be. So he differentiates between the two of them. Now, what the Gemara is asking over here is it seems from this that even something smaller than a pool can be classified as a shomer, because he, by definition, gave you that it's less than a pool. He says, if it's a pool, the pods don't matter. If it's kitnit, the pods do matter. Now, kitnit are definitely smaller than a pool, because that's his whole reasoning. His reasoning is that the pool is big enough that you don't need the pod. Whatever's smaller does need the pod. And the previous statement in the Mishnah was, if there's one gargir, if there's a single item left in the pod. So whatever single item is left in the pod of kitnit is smaller than a pool, and we're calling the pod a shomer. So that's problematic for those that believe that you can't have a shomer less than a pool size. So the Gemara answers, "Kidamar Rav Acha Brei D'Rava Bikulcha." We're not speaking about the pods. We're speaking about the stalks. Umishum Yad, and it's because of Yad handling the item. Hachanami Bikulcha Umishum Yad. So over here we're speaking about the stalk, and it's called a Yad. Umay B'Mashmishan. Then what is the word Mashmishan? Mashmishan sounded like the handling of the item. What does that have to do with the stalk of the item? Bitashmisham. Don't read it as bimashmisham, of the handling of them. Rather, bitashmisham, in order to carry them, to take them around, to move them, meaning that they are tashmish, not mashmisham in terms of handling directly the food or protecting the fruit, but it's because of the ability to tashmish, to utilize this or to move them or to work with them. So here, in the case of the pod, enochanami, the pod is not considered to be a shomer because you're below the threshold of a pool. And so therefore the pods are not important. So then if the pods aren't important, what are we speaking about in this Mishnah that is considered to be something that is added to the food that will count towards the food item? So the Gemara says, drop this shomer idea. It's really a yad. And that they're speaking about here is not that it is being utilized in order to handle it, protect it, but rather it's being utilized to hold it. In the cases where you have a case of a stalk that has multiple pods on it. So the stalk that has multiple pods on it, those pods now, if you add up all of the gargarim that are in the different pods, then you will get to the minimum shiur of a pool. For a kazayit here you need for a yad, you'll meet the minimum threshold that you need because of the number of pods that are on there. Once you've done that, then you can combine them. The kulcha, the stalk, brings them all together and says, I meet the minimum threshold, and then all the pods will count towards it because that's what you're trying to do here, is that you're trying to handle the item, and in handling the item, you are carrying the minimum shiur you need in order for it to be a yad. Now, you should just know that Tosafot disagrees with Rashi's interpretation here that the Sharvitim that we're speaking about here are the pods. He says that the Sharvitim are the stalks that have the pods on them. It does help a little bit with the remainder of the Gemara, where the Gemara later on will bring the fact that this Mishnah seemingly says that you can bring disparate items together. So according to Rashi, it's a little harder because what's the Havamina that this Mishnah is even speaking about that situation? Because here in the Mishnah, it's just speaking about single pods. According to Bali Tosafot, it's speaking about multiple pods, and therefore it makes sense. And then Bali Tosafot would say that what Rashi says is that the Havamina of the Gemara there is just speaking about multiple pods, and they were being mitzdarev together, because otherwise you wouldn't, with a single pod, get to your minimum shiur. And so Rashi just has to explain the Havamina that way in the upcoming Gemara. But the Tosafot starts with a stage beyond, which is it's already a branch with multiple pods on it.
And the sherets touch one of the pods, and then the assumption is that all the pods on this branch, after it touched a single pod, are aggregated to reach the kebetzat uchlim.
And then when you go to kelach, it goes to a stalk.
It's the exact same setup, but here the sherets touch the stalk and not the sharvit, not the pod. And in that way, it's acting as a yad, which aggregates everything on there, rather than touching a single sharvit, where you're still functioning derech shomer and aggregating all the pods that are there, rather than using the kelach as a yad.
And then, as Tosafot says over here, the significance in the Mishnah, the fact that the pods are empty except for one little gargir left in them, if you're talking about a kelach, what's the significance of that? Because there are multiples of them, and of course, you can meet the minimum of kazayit. So he says that the chiddush then in the Mishnah is that even though it's not a kazayit in a single place, but you're on the kelach, there are multiple different pods with gargirim in them, that we allow you to add together to get to the minimum shear of the kazayit, and that would be the fiddish if you explain it as a kelach. And that's the way Tosafot explains the Gemara here, as opposed to Rashi.
Okay, Tashma, the Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, this is what we had back on Kufyud Zayin, but we brought this as for the source, for the fact that a shomer is mitzdareif to the food item itself, and counts towards the minimum shiur of a kebetza. I'll call zera zerua, asher yizareya, kederach shebnei adam motzim. Just like people take out items to plant. Chita b'klipata.
The weed in its husk.
Sora b'klipata. The sora in its shell as well. Vadashim b'klipatam. And the lentils in their shell. So there you're clearly below the threshold of a pool, and yet it's still called a shomer. The shells in all these cases are classified as being something that is a shomer. The truth is, by chita, it's less of a problem. And this goes to your question, and again, we'll see this on the next amud when we turn the page, but the shell of the chita is eaten with the chita. Meaning that when you process the chita, the shell can be left in and made into flour. By barley, that is not true. And I think that's also not true by the lentils. There, the shells need to be taken off because they're too hard. They don't process well with the remainder of the item. So the truth is, by chita, it's less of an issue because the shell is a part of the food. It's not even a shomer in that sense. But here, the se'ura and the adashim,
where the shell is acting as a shomer, you're clearly dealing with something that's less than a pull, which is the minimum threshold for a shomer, according to Rav and according to Rabbi Chanina. So the Gemara answers, birya, shiny. When it's a whole entity, it's different. Meaning that when something is significant in of itself, because it's a whole entity, you don't need to meet the minimum threshold of a pull. When we're saying that you need to meet the minimum threshold is when it's not a whole item. So for instance, a half a bean. So half a bean is below the threshold, and it's not a full birya, and there the shomer won't be classified as a shomer according to this. But if you have a whole item, like a wheat kernel, or you have a barley kernel, or you have a lentil seed, all of these are whole items, they are significant in of themselves, and therefore whatever is around them, the shell that's around them, is going to be classified as a shomer, even according to Rav, even according to Rabbi Chanina.
And Rashi notes, you could have used this same answer and the question about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah before, and just said, birya shiny, with regards to the gargir inside of the pot.
So now, boy, Rabbi Shaya, shnei shomrim mahu shi'itztarfu. When you have two different shells or covers or protective layers on the item, what's the din in terms of being mitztaretim? Can they be joined together in order to count towards the minimum threshold that you need of kabetzat ochlin? Hey chidami, what is the scenario? Ilema bezeh agab zeh. You speak about a shell on top of another shell. Mi ika shomer agab shomer. Since when is a shomer agab shomer meaningful, or does it count towards this item? The truth is that yesterday we brought the case of the rimon, the pomegranate. Pomegranate had the pitma, and then it had the nates that's inside of it. The reason the nates doesn't count towards the rimon, or the size of the ochel of the rimon, is because the nates is considered to be a shomer ala shomer. It's not protecting the rimon, it's protecting the pitma. Now the truth is that that has a second issue, which is that once you pick the rimon, the nates dries out as well. So it's not only is it a shomer the shomer, but it also dries out. So that's why maybe the Gemara didn't bring that as a proof over here, but that's not. We have another Mishnah in Uksin, which is Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shlosh Klipot Babatzal. The onion has three layers of skin around it. The inner layer, Ben Shlema, Ben Kedura, Mitztarefet. Whether it is whole, or whether it's punctured, it is Mitztaref, it counts towards the Tumat Ochlin. Emsait, the middle layer, Shlema Mitztarefet. If it's whole, then it is Mitztarefet. Kedura ain't mitzterefet. If it has a hole in it, then it's not mitzteref. Chitzona, on the outer layer, benkach u benkach Torah. It doesn't matter at all. Now the difference being in these three layers is what is the classification of the skin of a batzal, of an onion. Onions, many, many layers of skin. So how do you know what is considered to be the ochel and what is considered to be the shomer that's around it? So that's what the Mishnah is clarifying. It's saying that the inner skin, the inner layers, are ochel. They are part of the onion that you eat. Since you eat it, it makes no difference whether it's whole or whether it has a hole in it, because it's the edible part of the onion, and that is counted as ochel, irrespective of the condition of the item. The next layer is a shomer. So the second layer, the secondary layer, is a protective layer on the onion. That protective layer, if it works or functions as a protection, then it is a shomer. If it doesn't protect it, then it's not a shomer. And that's what it says in the second layer. If it's whole, then it counts towards the tomato chleim because it's a shomer. It's protective of the onion that's under it. If it's punctured, then it's not functioning as a shomer, and it loses its status as a shomer. If it loses its status as a shomer, it can't count towards the minimum shiur. It's not classified as being a shomer to count towards the kabetza minimum of tumat ochlin. The third layer on top, which is a layer on top of that second layer, which that second layer is a protection for the inner part of the onion, which is the edible part of the onion. That third layer is never counted towards the tumat ochlin because it is a shomer l'shomer. It's not protecting the onion, it's protecting the protection of the onion. And a shomer l'shomer does not count towards kabetzat ochlin. So that is the answer. If you propose that the question of Rabbi Shaya is, what about a layer on top of a layer, a shomer on top of a shomer, the answer to that is, it doesn't count. A shomer on top of a shomer does not count towards kabetzat ochlin. The middle layer, which is a shomer directly on the fruit or on the vegetable here, that does count towards the kabetzat ochlin, as long as it's functioning as a shomer. In the onion, it's seemingly unique that the onion, if there's a hole in the layer, it's not providing protection, and therefore it doesn't count. In other items we've seen before, even if it doesn't protect the whole item, even if it protects a portion of the item, it's considered to be a shomer. So this might be a unique din with regards to batzal, or maybe certain vegetables that it's that way, but we saw before with regards to meat. If you have a piece of skin on it, even the skin doesn't cover all the meat, the skin, wherever it is, provides protection in that area, and it's called a shomer. So it doesn't have to be whole, it doesn't have to be something that is absolutely encompassing or enveloping the item. All right, so that can't be the nature of the question. So the question must be, Rabbi Hoshaya, shomer, ochel, shechilko, kamibayle. Speaking about a piece of food that had a shomer on it that was divided, that was split up. Now, if you split something into two completely, doesn't seem to be that there's any question over here. Nobody would think that two separate entities that have a shomer on them somehow will then come together to be unified in a way that you would count then the shomer of this one and the shomer of that one together to be kibetzat ochlim. So the question here is what exactly happened. So Rashi just explains, kagon ochel kibetza, you have an ochel that's the size of kibetza, v'shomro alav, and it has some protection above, v'chilko, and it got cut in half, it got divided. Tosafot clarifies, when it says the chilko, lo shechilko de gamre. It's not where it divided up totally, because then it would be pshita that's not mitzteret. Because like two egozim, two nuts that have a shell on them, there's no question that they're not mitzteret, that they don't join together, because they're separate entities, and each one's shell is independent of the other one's shell. Elamayri could go into kan basar ve'alav or. There was a piece of meat that had skin on it. Ve'chilko or. And he split the skin. So he had here flesh, and then there was hide on top of it. The hide is acting as a shomer. Now you slice the ore on top of it. So the ore still remains on the basar, but now it's not a single piece of ore on the basar. It's ore piece here, ore piece here. Rabbi Hoshaya wants to know, is that mitzdareif? And here is the nature of the question. Came in the high lo magina high, the high lo magina high, lo mitzdareifet. Maybe because the piece of hide that protects this side is not protecting the other side. And the hide on this side is not protecting the other side. Yes, they're both acting in a protective manner, but they're not protecting the same thing. One is protecting this side of the flesh, and one's protecting that side of the flesh. Odilma, kevin dehai magin adidei, dehai magin adidei. Or do we say, since each piece of hide is protecting a part of the food item, and the same food item, then mitzdarfim, they're able to be mitzdareif. So the nature of his question is, clearly, if you have a single piece of hide that is on the flesh, then because of the connection between the hide throughout, then the hide is viewed as a single entity, and then they will be mitzdareif to the ochel that's below it to reach that minimum threshold of what you need. But if you have the hide split, can you then view the hide as being a single entity? Does the food item be mitzdareif, joins the two pieces of hide together to make them into a single entity? And therefore, both pieces of hide plus the food itself will all be mitzdareif to reach your minimum threshold of a kibetzat ochlim? Or do we say that you have to look at each piece of hide independently because each piece of hide is functioning as a shomer in a different location or a different part of this food? And so maybe, yes, you can count the food with that shomer, the food and that shomer, but you can't count the food and both shomerim together because they don't function in the same way. And that's the nature of his question. And now the Gemara brings what we just saw before. Tashma. V'lazer ben azayir mitaher b'shel pul u'mitamei b'shel kidnit. Mipnei shirotzeh b'mashmishan. So but there again, it seems like the entire pod is mitzdareif to the one gargir, the one kernel that's left in it, or one pea or pulse that's left in it. Rashi says, "Kasaka datzei the shneim shlosha sharvitim mitzdarfim the kibetza imochlim shaven." The havamina here, what the Gemara is assuming is, when he says that these pods count towards the food, even multiple pods, if you have a number of pods there, and each one of them has some food item in it, then they're all mitzdareif together to come together and be a single entity to count towards the kibetza that you need. So that would make it sound like you can be mitzdareif separate pods or separate protective pods that would then add up to kibetzat ochlim. So the Gemara answers like it did before, Amar Rav Acha b'Rei d'Rava b'kulcha u'mishum yad. So this is the original statement of where he makes the statement before we said we answered the question using this statement. Here is where he made that original statement of Amaracha B'Reid Rabba, the Kolcha, we're dealing with the stalk, Umishum Yad. And we're thinking about it as a Yad, Umay B'Mashmishan. And what does Mashmishan over here mean? Tashmishan. It doesn't mean for handling of them, but it rather means for your service. The stalk serves you to carry all the different pods. The reason the pods can be joined together is not because the pods are a protective layer, and that protective layer then can be joined together even though they're divided up. That's not the reason. The reason is because there's something else that's unifying them, which is the stalk. They're all pods on a single stalk, and the stalk acts as a yad for all of the pods. Those pods now, if you add up all of the gargarim that are in the different pods, and that's why the stalk itself can be the vehicle for bringing tuma and being mitaher over here, because of the fact that it joins them together as a yad. Shomer adds up towards the kibbutz that they'll claim a yad does not count. The yad can convey tuma or bring in tuma. Yad, according to Rav, has a minimum shiur, but that minimum shiur means that the yad is holding that amount of food on it. If a yad has multiple pods or multiple items on it, then those multiple items will add up towards the kibbutz that they'll claim, and the yad would then be the vehicle for bringing tuma or having tuma leave those items. But it can bring together, it can unify everything on the yad. One stalk with the handle is handling all of these items simultaneously. So then you look not just at one pod on the stalk, you look at all the gargarim that are in the different pods on the stalk, you add those all together, and then those will add up to your minimum shiur that you need. And then the stalk itself is the unifying item for those different items. And Tosfot just adds that this isn't a dochak way to explain it anymore. Originally, we were reluctant to explain it this way because of the word of mashmishan. But once we interpreted mashmishan to be tashmisham, then the interpreting the Mishnah as kelachachad becomes a much more plausible and understandable explanation of the Mishnah that we're quoting. And that's why Tosfot says over here, the Gemara uses kolcha mishum yad instead of just saying that there are numbers of gargarim there, and the sum total of all the gargarim add up to a kibbutz without the shomrim. Tashma. The Tana debate Rabbi Shmuel, again the same brayta that we brought before. Al kol zera zeruah kederach shnei adam motzim lizriah chita beklipata sora beklipata vatashim beklipatan. So over there again, you don't have the minimum shiur that you were required in order for it to be classified as a shomer, and it would seem to be that the only way that you can reach that minimum shiur is by saying that we add them all together to get to that minimum shiur. The way we answered this on the previous amud was to say birya shiny, that a entity or a significant entity in its whole state is significant enough that you don't need to meet the minimum shiur. Rashi over here says that was a dochak answer, and the Gemara goes down a different path over here. What's interesting about the going down the different path is that the answer here ends up being even more dochak than the answer before, just as an interesting note. Although the Rashash says that he doesn't think Rashi's view here is correct, because there's a difference between saying that a birya is significant kashuv to overcome the deficit of the minimum requirements for a yad or minimum requirements for a shomer. But it doesn't mean that a birya makes up for the deficit of the minimum shiur of kibbutz that claim. They're two different dinim, totally. One's about chashivut, one is about a minimum threshold for either becoming tameh or conveying tuma, and therefore the answer birya would not have worked in this situation. But the Gemara first suggests kedamar Rav Acha B'Reid D'Rabba. This is similar to Rav Acha B'Reid D'Rabba before, b'kolcha u'mishum yad. It has to do with the stalk, and it's considered a yad. That was the answer we gave for Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah in the previous Mishnah that we just quoted. Hachanami, in our case too, bishidra. We're speaking about the spine, quote unquote, of the grain, the grains or the kernels in the stalks of wheat or on the stalks of barley. They spring forth or they come out of the rachis or the stem, and they do so in row upon row upon row, all around it on all sides. And then in the barley and the wheat, it's also covered by an on or a beard on top of it. And therefore, the rachis or the stem and the on or beard together act as a shomer over the grains that are in these rows that are there. That seems to be what the Gemara is suggesting over here when we're speaking about the shidra. So the shidra over here means that you're not picking up a single kernels over here. You're picking up a whole bunch of kernels together because they're joined together, unified by the head of the stalk of the grain. And that protects the grains. The grains or the kernels are protected in the head of the grain. Bishlama, Yilita, Tzricha, the Tatita. The upper ones need the lower ones. Ela Tatita, Maitrihilita. The lower ones, why do they need the upper ones? So if you ever take or looked at a head of grain, they are layers, rows and rows of kernels that are stacked on top of each other. Each layer has a beard and on that comes off of it, and the grains are in rows and rows and rows built up to the top. And when you crush it, you smack it, then the kernels start to fall out. That's the processing of the grain. Now, if you have them stacked up, up, up in rows above each other, the upper rows need the lower rows. Because if you dislodge the lower rows, the upper rows automatically start to fall out because they are no longer kept in there, pressured upward to be held in place. Because the lower rows create the support that then allows the row above it to sit. If you break the lower row, then the row above it will also fall out because there's nothing holding it up anymore. So what it's saying is, I understand for the upper rows, they need the lower rows. But the lower rows don't need the upper rows. So then why should it count? Meaning that for the upper rows, I understand why everything should count towards the total volume here as a shomer, because the lower rows are providing protection for the upper rows by keeping them in place. But the lower rows, they don't need the upper rows. And therefore, on the lower rows, why should it be considered or classified as if it's everything there is counted towards the shomer of the lower rows? So where it says, b'chadara, we're speaking about a single row. You're right, in Ochanami, that's true. So we're speaking about a single row that's there. Where it says, u'mi'ika kabetz ochlim b'chadara. Since when do you have a kabetz ochlim in a single row of kernels? Even if you break away a row of kernels, you still will not have a sufficient number of kernels that will give you a kabetzah. And that's what we're trying to say here, that you need a minimum of a kabetzah tochlim, because we're trying to be mitzarei for all these items to be a single entity. And you said, well, you had a kernel with its klipa, with its shell on it. Well, a kernel with its klipa is not sufficient. So it makes it sound like you have to add up all these kernels and their klipot. It means that you do add up all these items. And I said, no, it's not single kernels with their klipot on them. It's kernels in their grown state, which just means that they're affixed to the stalk and they're in rows and rows. And therefore we keep add them all together because they're all working together to protect each other by keeping them in place. Mar said that works well for the upper rows. It doesn't work well for the lower rows. Mar says, no, we're speaking about any single row. Any single row, if you dislodge one of the kernels, everything would fall apart, even on that single row. So even if on the lowest row, you have to count all the kernels there as being a unit because they protect each other. Mar says, that's great, but still, even in that one row, you don't have a kabetzah tochlim. You're not getting to your minimum threshold that you need. Mar says, no problem, v'chitei de Shimon ben Shetach. Referring to the wheat in the time period of Shimon ben Shetach, where the wheat kernels were the size of klayot, the size of kidneys, as Tosafot quotes over here, and the barley was the size of olives in his day, and the adashim in the time of Shimon ben Shetach were like dinarei zahav, were like the size of gold coins. So with their shomrim, with their shells or the protection around them, they added up to a kabetza, or in essence, the bounty of food and the size of the produce in the time of Shimon ben Shetach was significantly larger, and they, like the man, where they did in the midbar, they put it into a glass, into a jar to preserve it and show people how Hashem sustained people in the midbar. Yirmiyahu takes it out and Sefer Yirmiyahu to show the people. So too, in the time of Shimon ben Shetach, they saved from the food to show people what happens when you sin. When you sin, you don't get this. When you don't sin, like in the time of Shimon ben Shetach, this is what the produce, this is what the vegetation looks like, or the size of vegetation that you're going to get. And again, that's a siman that a person's actions are cosmic in nature. That it's not just that a person does mitzvah, does chataim, but they're mashpia. They have influence over the natural order, which is that when we do the right thing, then not only is there a spiritual or celestial effect of what we're doing, there's also an effect on the nature around us. And that the trees and the fruits and the vegetation are all more bountiful because of doing the right thing. And the opposite is true, and that's what's laid out in the end of Sefer Yikra about the connection between doing the right thing and the land producing versus doing the wrong thing and the land not producing. And so that's here what we're speaking about. Well, now that you gave that answer, why do you even need a row? Now you can just have one kernel. The one kernel is big enough to make that threshold. So what's interesting is Rashi said the Gemara didn't want to give the answer of Birya before, because that was a dokak answer. They'd rather give the answer that we're speaking about the entire stalk or beard that has all these kernels in it. Then the Gemara was forced then to move to a situation in which we may have one row, and then ended up speaking about the wheat in the time of Shimon Shetach. So it seems to me that we came back to even a more dokak answer, which is it's referring to those wheat kernels in the time of Shimon Shetach, versus saying that it's a Birya b'fnei atzmo, which makes that answer then look a lot more plausible versus this answer, which is uniquely associated with a particular period of time that Tanit the Beit Rabbi Shmuel was referencing to. Right now, Gemara says Gufa. This goes back to the last Tosefta from Olot that we dealt with in yesterday's daf, and that is Shnei Atzamot. You have two bones, Valeim Shnei Chatzei Zeitim, and they have each bone has a Chatzi Zayit of Meit on it. Yechnis Roshem Shnaim the Bayit, and the two bone sides of these units are inside the house. Ba'bayit ma'il aleihem, and the house creates an oil over them. A bayit tameh, according to the Tanakama, the house is tameh. It is mitzaref, the two chatzik zeitim, and now you have a single kazayit there, and a kazayit min amet causes tumat ha'oel. Yehuda ben Nekusa omer, Mishum Rabbi Yaakov, heyech shnei atzamot mitzarefim lekazayit. These are two separate entities, two separate atzamot, and they can't add up to be the kazayit that you need in order to have tumat ha'oel. So we discussed it yesterday in the context of Machoket Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, as to have a Rav and Rabbi Yochanan are going to explain this Braita, this Tosefta. Now we're looking at it from a different standpoint, which is Amresh Lokish, Loshanu Ela Etzem Davi Yad. This is only true when there's a bone there that is acting like a Yad. Aval Nima Lo Avi Yad. If it was a hair or something stringy, it would not be classified as a Yad. As we discussed yesterday, a bone from a mate is only mitameh b'maga u'b'masa. It's not mitameh b'ohel. And if it was speaking about the marrow inside the bone, and it was speaking about a bone being a shomer, then the marrow would have been inside the house as well, and then there'd be nothing to discuss. So we're obviously speaking about a bone that has basar on the bone. And the bone is functioning as a yad, as a handle for that basar. And now the yad is inside the house, but the basar is outside the house. So the question is, when you have that yad, the bone inside the house, and the basar that's outside the house, does the bone or the yad bring the basar, make it as if it's inside the house? Now, each one of them is a chatzi kezayit, and now if they were to add together or become a single unit, then you would have the minimum shiur of a kezayit. And if you have that minimum shiur of a kezayit, then you have kezayit amet, ba'ohel, and that would make the whole place tameh. If they remain separate, then there's nothing to discuss. Now, Rish Lakish qualifies this and says, the only reason that there's even a question in this Braita is because there was a bone that was attached to the meat, the flesh. The bone vis-a-vis the flesh is considered to be a yad, because when you pick up the bone, the flesh comes along with it. On the other hand, if it was a hair that was sticking out of the basar, and then you used that hair was inside the house and the basar was outside, you don't view the hair as a yad, because if you picked it up by that hair, it would tear away. It's not a secure method for picking it up, and it would not be classified as a yad. That's the view of Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Afilu Nima Nami Aviyad. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees and says even if it was a hair, it would be considered a yad. Eitvei Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan challenges Reish Lakish from the following, Or Sheish Alav Kizayit Basar. You have a hide that has a Kizayit Basar in it. Anugeya Batsiv, Hayotsemi Menu. If someone touches the bristles that are coming out of it, or the hair that is opposite it, tameh, then you are tameh. So you see over here that the hair is considered to be a yad because it's conveying the tuma through this hair from the kazayit basar that is on the hide that is on the other side of this hair. So when you touch the hair, you become tameh. The only way that could be is if the hair is viewed as a yad. Maila mishum yad. It must be because of a yad over here that these bristles or this hair is classified as being able to convey the tumah that is on the other side of the hide. Where it says, lo, mishum shomer. It's because the hair is protective. Mi iko shomer, al gabe shomer. Wait a minute. Over here you have a kazayit basar, then you have the hide, and then you have the hair on the other side of the hide. The hide already is the shomer. That means that the hair on top of the hide is a shomer le shomer. And we said before, a shomer le shomer doesn't count as a shomer, and therefore there should be no conveyance of tumah. It says, kalchule mechalchel. It would leave a hole in it. If you pluck the hair out of the hide would be left with a hole in it. So the hair is not protecting the hide. The hair is plugging the hole that would then go through to the basar on the other side. So it's functioning as a direct shomer, not as a shomer the shomer. If it is a shomer, according to Rish Lakish, why don't you say the same thing before with regards to the Nechatz Katzik is a team, where Rish Lakish said if it was a hair, it wouldn't work. Okay, it doesn't work because of Yad. Why doesn't it work because of a shomer? So Rashi says, and the Bali Tosafot second this, that over there it's speaking about a hair that's not connected to the basar. And since the hair is not connected to the basar, if it was a yad, it would still be functional and help you carry the basar. It's a shomer, it's no longer a shomer, because the shomer is only something that is opposite the basar itself. And that's what Rashi says, that yesh chomer biyad mi bishomer. That yad does have a chomra that shomer doesn't have, which is that a yad is anything that allows you to carry the item, even if it's not directly opposite that item. A shomer is only a shomer if it's actually on the item or protecting the item. So therefore, if you have a bone that extends that way from a piece of meat, then the bone can be a handle, a yad, because it allows you to carry the meat, but the part of the bone that's not opposite the basar can't be classified as a shomer because it's not protecting the basar. If you have marrow, we saw yesterday, Rashi says then the whole bone is surrounding the marrow and it can be considered a shomer. But that's not true when the basar is outside the bone. The area where the bone is covering the basar, there it could be a shomer. But where it's moved away or separated away from the basar, it could be a yad, but it can't be a shomer. And similarly over here, Rish Lakish will say that if you classify it as a shomer, then the hair is only a shomer where it's opposite the basar. If it's hair or bristle somewhere away from the basar, directly opposite the basar, it's not classified as a shomer. And that's how Rish Lakish will explain that case by the Mitosefta and Olot of the Shnei Chatzei Zeitim. Now for Rabbi Yochanan, why does it say over here, Shikin Egdo? That the Seyar is immediately opposite the Basar. For Rish Lakish, you need it to be opposite the Basar, because then it's classified as a Shomer. But for Rabbi Yochanan, who thinks that it's a Yad, it could be anywhere. So the Bali Tosafot over here, again, second what Rashi says, which is that the Kenegdo over here is Lav Dafka, according to Rabbi Yochanan, because Kenegdo doesn't matter in terms of the Yad. The Yad could be even Shlo Kenegdo. So you have to read it as Lav Dafka, according to Rabbi Yochanan. For Rish Lakish, it's Dafka Kenegdo, because of the fact that it is functioning as a shomer. Mativla Rav Acha bar Yaakov, is that really true? Ela Me'ato, if that's true, that hair on a hide, if you took it off, then the skin or hide would be left with holes in it. It would be punctured all the way through in numerous places. Me'ato, tefillin, eichin katvina. How do we ever write tefillin on the hides of the animals? Habeinan ktiva tama. Veleka says Uchtavtam. Uchtavtam says Ktiva Tama, that you have to write a clear and whole print on the hide, on the cloth that you're writing on. And if you have holes in there, it's going to leave gapping in the writing. You're not going to have a letter that is whole because the holes in the hide are going to leave gappings in these letters where they're not attached to each other. And therefore you don't have a Ktiva Tama. Where it says, first of all, Ishtamitate Haidami Bamarova. He forgot that which they say in Eretz Yisrael. Konekev shadio overlav inunekev. You have holes in the hide. They're not problematic if the hole is small enough that when you write with the quill, the ink just rides right over it and just fills the hole. It doesn't leave a gapping. It doesn't leave or stop the ink from flowing out of the quill. You simply just go over the hole and it fills the hole with the ink. That's not problematic. And here too, clearly, the holes that would be left by the hair on the hide are very, very small. They're tiny holes. And those holes you could write with a quill right over them and it wouldn't be a problem. So that's the first answer. Another answer for that is Kulei Mishum Yad. It's a din of Yad in that Mishnah. But Kedama Rabbi Yiloh, Bimelai, Ben Shebenam Laim. It's a bristle amongst the bristles. Hachanami benima shebenanimim. Also over here, it's one hair amongst many hairs. Which is that Reish Lakish says when you have a single hair, it cannot function as a yad, because a single hair is not secure enough to be classified as a yad. Then when you have multiple hairs together, like a tuft of hair, there already could be a yad, because you grab it all together. So yet, each one individually is not secure, but as a group, they are secure as they handle. And so there, Reish Lakish would agree, where you have multiple hairs, that is considered to be a yad. Where's the original statement of Rabbi Yehuda when he says, "Bimalai shebenam leim"? Aha! It's on this. Malai shebishibalim mitamim umitamim. The bristles that are on the stalks, they become tamei if the stalk becomes tamei, or if the kernels become tamei umitamim. And they also, if they become tamei, they're mitamei the kernels that are there. Ve'einan mitstarfim, and they're not mitstareif. Well, if they're not mitzareif, that shows you that it's a yad and not a shomer. Because a shomer, not only would it convey and bring tuma, it also would be mitzareif. The fact that it's not mitzareif shows you that it's a yad. Tumar says, Malai the maichazi. What is this bristle useful for? You pick up the bristle, it's going to fall out. So how could it be a yad? Amar Rabbi Eloi, b'malai shaben amlaim. It's a case where it's a number of bristles. It's a large number of bristles together. Then when you pick it up, they don't fall out. Again, each individual bristle, if you pulled it, it would just fall out. It would come out. It wouldn't give you an ability to carry it. But when you grab a whole bunch of them together, then it's secure and it is counted as a yad. Lishna achrina, amri lo. There is another version of this. In this view, everybody agrees that a single hair is not a yad. Rabbi Yochanan believes multiple hairs is a yad, and Reish Lakish disagrees with that. So Reish Lakish is going to explain that situation where there's a hair there, it's being a shomer, and the Gemara continues off of that. Hakanami mistavra. It makes sense to say that the hair is a shomer, because otherwise, what's a hair useful for? It's certainly not a yad, and even Rabbi Yochanan agrees that a single hair is not a yad. Demishum shomer. It makes sense that we're talking about a shomer here. Deisakadatcha mishum yad. If it was a problem of yad, nima achad the maichazi. Then what is a single hair good for? Kedama Rabbi La. It's not a case of a single hair. It's a single hair amongst a number of hairs, similar to the statement of Rabbi Eloi that was speaking about a bristle amongst the bristles. Where's the original statement of Rabbi Eloi? Aha! It's not. On this Mishnah, they can receive tuma, they can convey tuma, they are not mitzareif. And Malai the Maichazi, again, what is the bristle useful for? Rabbi Eloi, b'malai sheben amlaim. With a malai amongst the malayim. So the difference between the first Lashon and the second Lashon is what Rabbi Yochanan's position is. In the first Lashon, Reish Lakish believes that a single hair is not secure, and therefore it's not a yad. But he agrees when you have multiple hairs that it is classified as a yad. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees and says even a single hair is considered a yad. In the Lishna Achrina Amri law, the Gemara says that it must make sense that it's a shomer, because otherwise, why would a single hair be a yad? And that means that even Rabbi Yochanan agrees that a single hair doesn't work. And then in the version here, Rabbi Yochanan believes that a nima is classified as a yad only when there are multiple nimim, only when there's a lot of hair there, that a tuft of hair is it classified as a yad. But a single hair, he would agree, is not classified as a yad. So in the latter version, Reish Lakish would say that it's not a yad when there's a single hair, and it's not a yad even if there are multiple hairs. Rabbi Yochanan is the one who says that when there's a single hair, he agrees with Reish Lakish that there's no yad. But when there are multiple hairs, he says that it is classified as a yad, and that's what the explanation of that Mishnah is based on Rabbi Yochanan's now position. So the difference between the first and second version is whether Rabbi Yochanan thinks the single hair is a yad. In the first version, he thinks it is. In the second version, he thinks it's not. And whether Reish Lakish, where there are multiple hairs, thinks that it is a yad. In the first version, Reish Lakish thinks that it is a yad when you have multiple hairs. In the second version, he thinks it's not a yad with multiple hairs, because that's where Rabbi Yochanan thinks it is a yad. And that's why the Gemara said that it makes sense to say we're speaking about a shomer and not a yad, because of the fact that it says one hair, and one hair doesn't make no sense to be a yad. And even Rabbi Yochanan agrees with that. So therefore, Reish Lakish says, it's speaking about a shomer. And then Rabbi Yochanan comes along and says, no, maybe it could even be a yad, and a yad when it's speaking about multiple hairs. And some bring this qualification on our Mishnah, which is Va'or Varote Vakipa, our Mishnah, Mitztarfim Litamei Tumat Ochlim. They all add up towards reaching the minimal threshold of a kibbeitza for Tumat Ochlim. Amarish Lokish Loshanu Ela Etzem Davi Shomer. That's only true about a bone that is acting as a shomer. Aval Nima, if you speak about a hair, Lo Havi Shomer. That's not classified as a shomer. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Afilu Nima, Nami Havi Shomer. Even a hair would be a shomer. Amarle Reish Lokish to Rabbi Yochanan, Umiika Shomer, Agabe Shomer. Since when can you have a shomer on top of a shomer? Chuchule Mechalchel. So Rabbi Yochanan answered, that's because if you pull the hairs out, the hide would be left with holes in it, and therefore the hair is also acting as a shomer. Matkivla Rav Acha, Elamiata Tfilin Echikat Vinan. And then we have Rav Acha's question, which is, then how do you write Tfilin? Habin Ektiva Tamo Veleka. You need to have whole writing without any skips or jumps or gaps between the letters, and these holes are going to provide a problem in having Ktiva Tama. Ishtamita day, he forgot, Hadam Reba Marova, that's what they say in Eretz Yisrael, Konekev Shadayo, Over Alav, Enonekev. If you can write and run the quill over it, and the dio would flow over the hole, because the hole is not big enough to catch the quill or to leave a gap or an empty space, the ink will just fill in the hole, then it's not problematic. And obviously a hair's hole, a follicle hole, is not that big. And if you write over it, the ink is just going to fill in the holes, and it's not going to be a problem. Eitavei Rabbi Yochanan the Reish Lakish. Or basar, if you touch a bristle that's coming out of it, and a hair which has opposite it the basar, tamei, that is tamei, my love, mishum shomer, the problem must be a problem of shomer. And again, we said before, that makes sense that it's shomer, because it's thinking about a single hair. It says, lo, mishum yad, nima achat tamei chazyo. How can a single hair be a yad? It's a case where you have a bristle amongst multiple bristles. So here it's a hair amongst a large number of hairs. Where was the original statement of Rabbi Yilah? Ahad itznan on that Mishnah. The bristles that are on the stalks, mitam'im umitam'im ve'ein mitstarfim. They convey tuma. They receive tuma, and they're not mitzareit, meaning they're a yad. Malai lamai chazyo. What is a malai useful for? It's a single bristle. You pick it up, it's going to fall out when you pick it up. Amar Rabbi Yilah b'malai shebin amlaim. It's a case where there's a bristle amongst the bristles, and so that's the answer to the question, as how it can function as a yad. So in this version that's on our Mishnah, over here, Rabbi Yochanan agrees that a nima achat, a single hair, does not act as a yad. But he thinks the single hair is a shomer. And then Reish Lakish comes along and says it's not a shomer, it is a yad. Well, how can it be a yad? A single hair doesn't act as a yad. Even Rabbi Yochanan says that. Reish Lakish's answer is, we're speaking about a tuft of hair, speaking about multiple hairs. In that way, they would explain their machloket there vis-a-vis our Mishnah, if Reish Lakish was qualifying our Mishnah. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots in the middle of Kuf Chaf Amud Aleph.